Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, guys. I need a little help for a fellow streetwalker. On May 10th, 1996, Leon Lorales was murdered outside of Brownwood, Texas, and the case has never been solved. The investigation so far has only resulted in dead ends and bad leads, leading his family and friends struggling with the lack of information. Leon's niece and fellow streetwalker, Arlene Harbison, has set up a GoFundMe to help finance the hiring of a private investigator to help the family get some answers. The GoFundMe will also be used to create a memorial in Brownwood to bring attention to his case and ensure he is not forgotten. If you're a listener, you're a streetwalker. If you're a guest, you're a streetwalker. If you're a friend of the show, you're a streetwalker. And I like to think that the streetwalkers are a tight-knit community willing to help each other out. Let's help Arlene Harbison and her family get the answers they need and help close this awful, awful period in their lives. Join me in donating to the Justice for Leon Lorales Fund today. You can go to GoFundMe.com and search Leon Lorales, Laurelles. Thanks, folks.
Hey, what's up? This is Jeremy Popoff from the band Lit. You're listening to Fascination Street.
I believe that everybody has a story, and I'm fascinated to hear them. So come with me as we take a walk down Fascination Street. Welcome back, Streetwalkers. This episode is with Rachel Brandsness and Tyler Warren from the band Flarelight. In this episode, we talk about how both of them got into music, some of the things that they have done in other bands and as solo artists, including opening up for bands like Evanescence and Neon Trees and Hailstorm, getting to be handpicked to be in a Queen tribute band, and then getting handpicked from those same members of Queen to be in Queen. We're all over the place here. We talk about what it's like to be hand-selected based on your talent when there's so many other people that could have been chosen, but you got the call. We reminisce about what was our first big concert and how that affected us. We talk a little bit about how exciting it was for Tyler to perform at the Queen's Jubilee with Queen and Adam Lambert. And then we talk about their new band, Flarelight. Their second album, The Light We Make, came out on November 11th, and they have both graciously agreed to let me play one of the tracks off that album called Make Me Sick. Special shout out to mutual friend of all three of us, I guess, Angela Lisi. Thank you so much for making this happen, Angela. And this is my conversation with Rachel Brandsness and Tyler Warren from the band Flarelight.
Yeah, talk to me, yeah.
Welcome to Fascination Street Podcast, Rachel Brandsness. Did I say that right? Brandsness?
You did, yeah. That's it.
And Tyler Warren, what's up, dude?
Oh, not much. Just got blisters all over my feet.
Hey, you're doing it wrong. Whatever you're doing it wrong.
I know.
I can't go past that. Why do you have blisters on your feet?
I hiked all the way to the bottom and back to the Grand Canyon yesterday.
Okay. just real quick, did you drop something? Like, why? Why did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I dropped my phone and it slid all the way down. So I was like, well, I kind of got to have my phone, so I better go get it. No, I was just on my way back from the West Coast, and I decided to make a few stops on the way. And I've always wanted to do that. I was going to camp, but you've got to apply like 4 months in advance for a permit for that kind of thing. But this time I was bound and determined to go all the way down and come back up.
It seems odd that you would need a permit to camp at a national park when apparently in any major city in America, you can just throw a tent in the middle of the sidewalk and hang out.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you would think it would be a little bit easier than that, but I mean, it was all worth it. I got no complaints.
That sounds rad. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get to know you guys, Rachel, Tyler. First off, Rachel, tell me where you were born and raised. Where'd you grow up?
Sure. Yeah. I'm actually from Klamath Falls, Oregon. It's kind of Southern Oregon, just a smaller town. So Pacific Northwest represent. Grew up there. It was a nice place to grow up. And then I've kind of been back and forth between Nashville, Tennessee, and New Orleans, Louisiana during the last 14 or so years.
Is your parents generations from wherever you said Portland?
Oh, Klamath Falls. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're making that town up. So I'm just going to say someplace in Oregon. It doesn't sound real.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess now, yeah, my parents still live there. My grandparents live there as well. So went to the same high school as my grandparents. So I guess that counts as multi-generational at this point.
You went to high school with your grandparents? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've got that Benjamin Button syndrome thing where I just keep looking younger.
She's actually 80 years old right now.
I'm 87.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. You've seen a lot.
Yeah.
So what was it that your parents wanted you to be? Like, what was their plan for you? Because I'm pretty sure it wasn't this.
Oh man, I don't know exactly what they had in mind. I mean, even for me, when I was a little kid, I wanted to be an astronaut and I was pretty set on that. But I have very bad eyesight. Like I wear contact lenses. So I found out at some point that I couldn't see well enough to qualify. And I think I'm too short too, because they have kind of strict height rules for the spacesuits. But luckily by then I had started playing guitar. They probably thought I was pretty good at like math and some things like that. I think they probably wanted me to be an engineer or something like that.
You could work in the engineering room. You don't have to stay up on the moon. You could just do all the, you know, you've seen Hidden Figures.
I love that movie. Yeah.
I had a previous guest on the show, astronaut Scott Kelly.
Oh, cool.
He was in space for almost consecutively an entire year.
Jeez.
Who cares? The guy was a total asshole. So I'm glad that you weren't an astronaut.
That would not be part of my goals if I was still aspiring to be an astronaut.
Who knew that was also the prerequisite of being an astronaut? You got to be an asshole.
Yeah.
I think what happens is that along the lines, you know, there's many steps before you get to be an astronaut. And one of those steps is to be a pilot for, you know, the Navy. And I think that part is where the asshole requirement comes in.
Mm. Possibly.
Yeah, almost everybody in Top Gun's an asshole on the show, right?
And maybe if you spend too much time in space, your social skills deteriorate. That's probably an effect of being up there too long.
That is the sweetest excuse anybody could possibly give him. Very cool. Okay, so when you realized that you weren't going to be an astronaut, then what happened?
Right before I turned 13, I played trumpet in band and did, you know, marching band and the whole nine, and unironically enjoyed it. And then a friend of mine when I was about 13 got an electric guitar. And I just remember thinking, oh, that's pretty badass. So I begged my mom and dad to let me get one. And they were very convinced that it was going to just be this phase situation that I'd be over in 2 or 3 months. It ended up not being. And I was totally obsessed with it kind of from then till now. That's kind of when I got a guitar, and then I saw, because my town is very small, as you can probably guess since you've never heard of it.
Yeah. Since you made it up.
Yeah. Since it doesn't exist. Yeah.
There's just you and your parents and your grandparents. Yeah, and that's why y'all all went to the same school.
Exactly. And a couple potatoes. But so my dad took me to Bend, Oregon to see a Heart concert when I was 14, I think. And I had not really seen a bigger concert at an amphitheater with the lights and that type of thing prior to that, just kind of smaller local stuff. And I kind of remember we were just sitting in the grass. It was an outside thing, and just kind of being like, the whole time, like, it was, you know, like jaw dropped, because I kind of just didn't realize that concerts could be that cool. Furthermore, I think it was extra impactful just because of seeing, like, I really like seeing Nancy Wilson play guitar, because I hadn't really, you know, most of the guitar players that I like really knew of that were famous were more men players, like Jimmy Page and people like that. And so seeing another female play like that, I was kind of like, oh, whoa, that, like, you can do that? That can be a job? So that's kind of what set me on this path.
Thank you for bringing that up. I've heard a lot in, like, I don't know, the last dozen years or so, that people need to see a representation of themselves doing something to kind of let them know that that's something they can do. So that was a real thing for you?
That was a real...
I didn't mean it to sound like that, but that was a thing?
Yeah, honestly, it was. And it was kind of one of those things that I didn't realize that I needed to see it until I did see it, you know, like, it's not that before that I didn't think like, oh, like, girls can't do this. It, you know, it wasn't like that. But just there was something about seeing her do it and feeling like, oh, she isn't that different from me. There is something about being able to see yourself, I think, in somebody else, especially somebody that you admire, and seeing somebody doing something like that. It definitely did for me. I had this little kind of light bulb moment. So I do think that representation in that way is super important.
Would it be fair to say that you didn't need to see someone who looked like you do it? It just never occurred to you that that was something you could do until you saw it?
Yeah, I guess kind of. Like, I think that it's not unreasonable that I would have, if I had not seen her, that I would have probably still come around to that conclusion at some point. But that was a really powerful paradigm shift for me to actually see it that way, because not only did it like help the idea kind of occur to me of, oh, I could do this, but it made me really want to, because I think I was just really inspired, because I just thought like, man, this lady is so kick-ass. Like, now I aspire to be that cool. So yeah, you know, like I said, I think it still could have happened without that, but that seeing it was like this little lightning bolt that like just kind of hit me in the chest, and I was never the same. So
that is a rad story. So Heart was your first big concert?
They were, yeah.
Kiss was my first big concert, or so I'm told. My parents, they both told me independently, so I guess I believe them, that my first concert was Kiss, like in 1977, but I was 3, so I don't remember it.
That would have been Love Gun.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, Tyler, where are you born and raised, man? Where are you from?
I'm from Tennessee. I was born like in Murray, Kentucky or something like that, but I lived in Camden, Tennessee my whole life, my whole childhood and everything.
And what was the plan? What did your parents want you to be?
I think I'm doing exactly what they wanted me to do.
No way.
Yeah, I would say so. They both play. They both had bands in the 70s and 80s. So music was always, always, always around in my life.
What kind of music did they play and what did they play?
They did rock and roll. My dad is a singer, and my mom sings too, but she plays keys.
Rad. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they did the bar scene for a long time, and after 20 something years after raising me, they started doing it again. So it's always been in there, all that music vibe.
So did you get to play like their old instruments when you were growing up? Like, did you learn on your mom's piano or something?
I wish. Unfortunately, I was born left-handed, so I couldn't play my dad's guitar.
Oh my gosh, they should have gave you away for adoption. What is wrong? Oh,
thank God they didn't. Who knows what I'd be doing now?
So what was your first big concert? And if you say Love Gun, 1977, San Antonio, that's going to be a problem.
I wish. My first concert, I was a year older than you. I was 4, and it was the Dr. Feelgood tour in 1990 for Motley Crue.
Whoa.
There was a lot of firsts that night.
Wow. Take it easy, bro.
My first concert, my first set of boobs in the crowd.
The first time you got high in public.
First time I saw somebody break a bass guitar on purpose.
Oh, wow. Who was that?
That was Nikki Sixx. I remember it was blue for some reason. I don't know why.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when did you discover that you wanted to play music? When did that bug bite you?
I mean, it was around that time, so it's hard to say. My mom and dad got me my first drum kit Christmas of 89, so I was 3, and just kind of took to it right away. I guess they just kind of noticed I was just beating on stuff all the time, so they're like, maybe we probably ought to get this kid a drum set.
Yeah, because MMA wasn't around yet, so they're like, yeah. Well,
so it doesn't break everything in the house. But yeah, I mean, got that drum kit and then saw Motley Crue, and then it was kind of all over after that, honestly.
Oh, really? So even though Nikki Sixx was breaking shit in front of your face when you were four, it was that dude sweating like a monkey behind him that really...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Probably didn't help matters that somehow dad knew some security guy at the municipal auditorium in Nashville and we got to meet Tommy.
Get right on out of town.
Yeah. So that was, I'm sure that had everything to do with it, to be honest.
Sweet.
So you met Tommy at 4 years old?
Yeah.
Nice.
And you think he's a giant now? Just imagine how tall he is to a 4 year old. That definitely changed my life. And after that, it was music through and through for the rest of it.
So, Tyler, is it safe to say that you have subscribed to Tommy Lee's OnlyFans?
I don't know, man. I think we've all seen enough of that. Although I will say I was on Instagram that morning, just happened to be scrolling and suddenly, whoa, okay, there it is again.
Again.
Again. Yeah. Yeah.
Rachel, you have played in other bands, obviously, and you have gotten a chance to play in front of and with some of the biggest bands of the last, I don't know, 20 years. You've opened for like Evanescence, Neon Trees, Hailstorm. Mm-hmm. Why?
Why?
Yeah. So my question really, why that style of music? I don't know what those other bands were, but I have to assume that they were similar, at least in taste, to those bands. Why that style of music? What drew you to it?
Well, I've always just really liked rock music in general.
Thanks, Nancy.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy Wilson. So, and really kind of the whole gamut, like from the more modern stuff and some of the heavier stuff to a point. I don't go super, super into the metal stratosphere generally, but I can appreciate it. And then all the way, you know, to the classic stuff and the indie stuff as well. But at the time, especially like with Evanescence and Hailstorm, I was playing in this kind of a, I guess pop rock, like rock with essences of pop in it, band called Fools for Rowan. And they had kind of a similar vibe to those two groups. I played lead guitar. We had a female singer. And so it just kind of fit like with those, you know, with like Lizzie Hale, her voice, and Amy Lee. And we just really kind of lucked out, honestly. I mean, I think we opened for Hailstorm on a couple occasions at different festivals. And then when Evanescence kind of came back from their hiatus in, I guess, 2011, somebody from their camp reached out to ours and offered us a spot opening when they played at, I think it was the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville. And I mean, it was so cool because everybody was just so pumped to be there. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was at the War Memorial at TPAC.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it was cool. Like, it was in this kind of theater-y area. And it was cool for me because, I mean, like with Evanescence, for example, my little sister, I remember, like, had their first CD when we were growing up. And not that they're like that much older, but just, you know, they got like started a handful of years prior to that. And so it was just cool, like, being there. And I got to talk to Amy Lee. I was, you know, nervous to be like, hey, like, my sister had your CD and it's like so cool. And anyway, we're so excited to be here. But she was lovely. She was like so friendly. So it was really fun.
Was that your first time opening for a big name act like that?
By then we had already done Hailstorm. I can't remember if Neon Trees was like before or after that. We had done a few. That one felt particularly just kind of momentous, I think, especially because it was like not just part of a, you know, like where you're before them in a festival lineup, which is still a huge deal, but at kind of getting like specifically asked to do that show felt really special. And especially because like up until that point, they hadn't really played much in years. We had done a few at Summerfest in Wisconsin, and that those like later evening slots have a bunch of people. So those were nice, really big ones. But that Evanescence one was kind of like a, just this extra special moment for us.
Hey, Streetwalkers, here's a word from our sponsors.
So I ran into previous guest of this show, Chris Gronkowski, the other day, and it went a little something like this.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Chris. Hey, you know what sucks? When I get done with my workout at the gym, my protein shake's not cold anymore, man. It's room temperature.
Weird. I haven't run into you at the gym lately.
Busted. Okay, truth be told, I don't work out. But I do get thirsty after a long day of podcasting. I just can't seem to keep my cocktails cold.
You should use an ice shaker.
What's an ice shaker?
The ice shaker is a double-walled, vacuum-insulated, stainless steel shaker bottle with a patented twist and agitator that breaks up the protein powders.
So you're saying I should switch to an ice shaker, take out the agitator so I can fit more ice in the cup and it'll stay cold longer?
Steve, you don't need more ice. The Ice Shaker is third-party tested and verified to keep your drink cold for 30-plus hours.
Chris, you're a genius. I'll still remove the patented screw-in agitator and just add more booze.
I guess technically you could, but if you actually use the Ice Shaker as a protein drink cup, the agitator breaks up the powder and doesn't bounce around like you're shaking a paint can.
Why are we still talking? Let's party.
Grog style!
That's right, streetwalkers. Ice Shaker is made from kitchen-grade stainless steel, so it doesn't smell all funky after you use it a couple of times like those cheap plastic ones. When I'm out and about doing interviews or partying Gronk style, I use the Fascination Street Podcast Edition 26-ounce Flex Ice Shaker Cup, and it keeps my drink cold until the sun comes up. You saw Ice Shaker on Shark Tank. All five sharks made an offer with Mark Cuban and Alex Rodriguez closing the deal. Now you can get a deal too. Order your own 26-ounce Flex Cup right now at iceshaker.com and use the promo code FSP for $5 off your first order. Once again, that's iceshaker.com, promo code FSP, as in Fascination Street Pod, for $5 off your first order. That's iceshaker.com, promo code FSP.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's get back into it.
From all of the spying that you've done watching all these ladies up on the big stage, whether they're singing or whether they're shredding, what's the big takeaway for a little girl who wants to be a rock and roll star?
That's a great question. Well, mainly just say that if you want to, you absolutely can. You got to put in the work for sure. I mean, a lot of these ladies that we're talking about, like Lindsay Hill and Amy Lee and Nancy Wilson, I mean, they're amazing at their craft. And a lot of them, especially, I mean, now, like, thanks to people like Nancy Wilson, there are more opportunities for women in music in general and in rock and roll. I mean, like I think it was the 80s, there used to be rules on the radio where they could only play like one girl per hour, you know? So it was really hard for people like Chrissy Hynde and Pat Benatar and stuff like that, because, you know, in this market, they're like, well, we already played a girl this hour, you know, which like sounds so crazy now, but that was really a thing. And so it's kind of thanks to some of those women, the Pat Benatars, the Nancy Wilsons, that there are more opportunities for us now. And so I would just say, if you're like a little girl coming up, study other people who play, and it doesn't have to just be girls, study guys too, and get really good. And then just be prepared to hear no a lot, but don't let that discourage you, because it takes a lot of no's sometimes to get a yes, but all you need is one yes. So
I think that is fantastic advice. Are you familiar with the makeup line Mary Kay?
I am, yeah.
Mary Kay Ash, the founder of Mary Kay, she would teach, and I guess they still teach it, the consultants, you know, they're basically saleswomen. And what they would do is they would say, you know, if you keep getting no's, which, I mean, you get more no's than you get yeses, that's just the nature of sales. Make a game out of it. See if you can get to 100 no's in a row. And when you get that yes, you got to start over. Sort of a shitty way to say that there's going to be more no's than yeses. But if you can try and wrap your head around, you know, making a game out of it or just brushing it aside or whatever, I think that'll go a long way to helping people get to whatever it is that their goal is. Tyler, why? That's my favorite question. So you have never played drums in front of a live... No, wait a minute.
Yeah, I don't even know what the drums are. That whole story I told you before was a lie.
I know. I read it. I saw that movie. You are a percussionist. Can I say drummer? Percussionist sounds so symphonic.
Okay. It does.
It sounds orchestral.
Yeah, and I have done all that shit.
Did you do it in school? Did you play drums in the high school band?
Yeah, in high school and college, I did all the percussion stuff and marimba and all the things. And it helped me a lot, actually, because, you know, learning how to read music and understand things like that really gives you a whole new palette, especially even in rock and roll, whenever you're writing songs, like knowing what goes where. It helps. It can do nothing but help. But anyways, yes, drummer's fine.
When you're coming up, I'm assuming you drummed for other bands.
Yeah, I just whatever I could do. And in college, I had a band like everybody does that plays some kind of instrument. So I did that for a little while.
What kind of music was it?
Oh, it was kind of on the edge of emo back in the day.
What?
Yeah.
You mean like The Cure and Depeche Mode, that kind of emo, or?
A little later, I would say like My Chem, stuff like that.
All right.
What was that other band they loved? Seosin, I think was the name.
Oh, yeah, sure. Seosin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then after that, I had a solo band where I would front and play guitar and all that stuff. And then around the time of 2009-2010, I played drums in another band called 1056. And then all that other stuff started happening.
So you've been in bands where you sang, you've been in bands where you play guitar, you've been in bands where you play drums.
Yeah.
Rachel, did you ever be in a band where, not a school band, but were you ever in like a rock and roll band where you played the trumpet?
Well, not live, but there's a Flare Light track that actually does have a little bit of trumpet in it that I played, and we've manipulated it greatly with different sound effects, so it kind of sounds more synthy, but there's a hidden trumpet in one of our songs.
Which song is that?
It's one that's yet to be released, so I don't know.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, I know.
So is it on the new album, The Light We Make?
It's actually not.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so but right, I can't say too much more because I'll start giving away secrets. But
she also doesn't like talking about her ska background.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Say goodbye, Tyler. You're never going to talk again. Rachel, let's talk ska.
Oh, gosh. No, I actually don't have a ska background.
Good. I'm totally kidding.
If only.
Tyler,
yeah.
I am under the impression that you have played and maybe currently still play with folks like Brian May. That's a real person, right?
Who?
He is a real person.
You're part of, I don't even know what they're called. Is it called Queen Plus Adam? Or like, what is the name of this band?
It's written with the plus, but it's just Queen and Adam Lambert.
Okay. How did that happen? I'm sorry. I phrased it incorrectly. Why?
There we go. Okay. So around 2011, I started seeing these things online from one of the Queen websites that Roger Taylor, the drummer, was going to start an official tribute band because he hated all these ones that were all over the world. They were there all dressing like Freddie and, you know, dressing up and doing all that shit, but they can't sing or play worth a damn. And what he wanted was a band that would actually get out there and rip the shit out of these songs and not get up there and try to look and prance and dance like Freddie. So I saw that and was like, okay. Didn't think anything of it.
So he wanted to start a tribute band to tribute his own band?
An official tribute band, yeah. I mean, he is Roger. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yes, he can.
He's so funny. But yeah, I saw it and I was like, okay, whatever. Didn't think anything of it. And then I started getting messages from friends saying, you got to do this. It started out where they just had thousands of submissions. People would send the videos, think they had to upload them to YouTube or something like that, and then send them the link. So I just made a video singing, a video guitaring, a video drumming, and then kind of put it away for a couple of months. And then I got this email saying that I'd made it to the next round or whatever. And what that entailed is there would be like some kind of like fan vote online after they watched these videos. I was like, okay, whatever. And then eventually I got past that round and they decided to have a final audition at Studio 606, which is the Foo Fighters studio in LA. I think that was whenever I was like, okay, maybe there is something to this. Whenever I got my flight information and everything, and then we get there and Roger's there and the keyboard player, Spike Edney's there, and their manager and everybody is like, okay, I'm in the Foo Fighters studio right now with all these other people. And then, oh, there's Roger. Okay, this is real. So we'd had a whole day of, like, they would put us in these little different pods of bands and we'd play a couple songs and that was it. And day was finished. We all took our pictures with Roger because we were like, oh my God. Then we went home. And then like a week or two later, I was helping my dad roof because he's also a construction guy. He's a contractor too. And we were on top of this church roofing it. And then I got that email saying that I got that gig. So then I did that.
So what was the name of that? Was it called like the Queen Experience or what was it called?
It was called the Queen Extravaganza.
Okay.
And our very first gig we ever did was a couple of months later in April 2012 on American Idol.
This was purely a tribute band. There was no original Queen members in this band.
No.
Okay.
Although for that American Idol thing, Brian and Roger did play with us, just sort of like putting cred to the name, I guess.
Sure.
But Roger and Spike have always been super involved with the show and putting it together and set list and stuff like that. And then, yeah, got to know them through that and did that from 2012 for about 5 years. And then in 2016, I got an email from one of the management around Christmas that year that Rufus, Roger's son, was playing percussion for Queen and Adam Lambert. But he had to drop the gig because he got the gig playing drums for the Darkness. So he took that. And I mean, it's a perfect fit. Rufus is fucking great. And then after that, I got that email asking if I wanted to take his spot. And I was like, gee, let me think. Sure.
So when you first got that email, and I don't want to know what it is, but was there a salary attached to that email?
No, all that came later.
Oh, okay, cool. So then what did you tell your dad, hey, dad, I love you, but you can finish this MF and roof on your GD and self.
He got up off that roof and started crying.
Oh, that is so sweet.
You're going to hate that I said that.
There's plenty to go around for things that you said that people are going to hate. English teachers are going to hate that you used the word guitaring.
Just put like a dash. They know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Guitaring, the verb.
It is now.
Okay, so you're playing now, and this is still an ongoing thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. We've been touring since 2017. Well, they've been touring since 14, but I've been with them since 2017, and we finally did our 2-year postponed European tour this summer.
Part of that tour is when you got to play the Queen's Jubilee.
Yeah, man.
Get the fuck out of here.
How lucky were we that actually happened, huh?
Remember at the beginning, I was like, what's the first big concert y'all saw? You're probably the last big concert she saw.
If she saw it on TV or something like that, because they were all there. But, you know, she was pretty ill at that point.
Oh, she'd be illin'. I got you. But what did it feel like when you got that? Like when you found out, oh, hey, guess what, guys? We're going to go play the Queen's Jubilee.
That was kind of a late thing, actually. The tour we already knew was already happening. And I want to say maybe like a couple of weeks, maybe a month before we head out to start rehearsals for the tour, we are getting these chirps of something could be happening on this date. And we're all smart enough to like, look, oh, what's going on this date? Oh, the Jubilee. I bet that's what they're talking about. You know, it was one of those things where you just don't know if it's going to happen until it happens. And then they finally made the announcement like, okay, this is real. So we get there, we're doing the rehearsal. It's all so trippy anyways, but we're in front of the Queen Victoria and you just kind of look out over the mall and it's gated off because it's a sound check. But you look out and all these people are already there and it's miles and miles and miles, hundreds of thousands of people. They're just listening to us. And after we're done, you just hear all these people screaming and you can't really see them, but you hear them. And it's just so nuts, man. And then whenever we finally got out there to do our 5 minutes or whatever the hell it was, it's nothing I'm ever going to experience again. I think just that sea of people all throughout the mall. I can't even get the words out. It's just something that I'm never experiencing again.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet Rachel and Tyler? You guys.
Oh, okay. So that band that I mentioned in 2009 that I was in, 1056, the guitarist from that band, Gibby, we became pretty good buddies. And then he quit. And then we decided to kind of stick together afterwards whenever that band was kaput. And I was still recording solo music. He joined my band on lead guitar. And we would write and put out a few albums and do a couple shows. And then eventually, actually, you'll have to fill in the gaps here because I'm not sure how he got to know you guys to, or it was a drummer, right?
I think so. Cause that same guy who Gibby, who's Tyler's friend, I think he vaguely knew the drummer of that older pop rock band that I was in. And we were looking for a bass player at the time, and had a whole kind of slew of dates set up. And so I think it was, yeah, through our drummer, Jordan, that Gibby got looped into that circle, and we were auditioning bass players. And so he tried out on bass for us and ended up being in our band. And so then that's when I became really, really good friends with him. And so Tyler and I still didn't really know each other. But then there was one show, just kind of a small thing, where that band, Fools for Own, needed a sub drummer, a substitute, because our drummer's wife was having a baby.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. So Gibby got Tyler, you know, we needed somebody who could just step in totally last minute. He was like, I know just the guy. So Tyler came in, subbed the show for us. It was awesome. That's when we first met. And then later I was working on just some solo stuff, just kind of for fun, and needed somebody to play drums on it and record. And Gibby's like, well, you should ask Tyler. I bet he would do it. And that's kind of where we first started to actually collaborate, the two of us. And then a handful of years later, Tyler kind of had the initial idea for doing the Flare Light stuff. And so, yeah, it kind of spawned out of that. Really, like, we always kind of joke that Gibby is fully responsible because he is the link that brought us together.
Yeah.
So Gibby is the friend who decided to unite your two solo projects.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, so I spent a good bit of my morning listening to Flare Light on Spotify. By the way, you have a new subscriber on Spotify.
Yes.
I loved it. I want to say, for those listening who maybe haven't heard, go check them out. In my personal opinion, I think they sound like I'm not talking to you. I think you guys sound like sort of a cross between Silver Sun Pickups and that band Churches that doesn't know how to spell churches.
Nice. I'll take that.
There's no V in Churches. So yeah, I think that you guys sound like a sort of a combination between those two bands, and I really dig those two bands. So well done.
Thank you.
Hey, that's all right. I love Churches.
Yeah, we like both of those groups. So that's...
Yeah, but you like to roof Churches. There's a difference. So you guys decide to get together. Tell me where the name Flare Light comes from. Just so everybody knows, Flare Light, it's all one word. FLARELIGHT. And there's just two of them. They're a duo.
Yeah.
Why the name Flare Light?
Well, we were having a hell of a time naming our band. At that point, we had kind of decided, after we had written and recorded most of the music, all right, this is going to be a band. What are we going to call it? And then days went by and
we overthought it and overthought it.
Neither of us had any kind of idea that we thought was decent enough. And then I don't know if I was actually listening to it or if the lyric popped into my head, but there's this song by Soundgarden called 4th of July.
Okay.
And Chris Cornell is one of my favorite vocalists ever and one of probably my biggest inspiration for my voice. And there's a line in that second verse of that song called Pale in the Flare Light. And then I heard Flare Light. I was like, ooh, that sounds kind of cool. Hey, Rach, what do you think about this?
And I was like, I'm so ready to just have a name and not think about it anymore. So I was like, yes, perfect.
Yeah. So that's kind of it, really.
So you were like, hey, Rach, what do you think about this name? And she was like, well, I don't like it. I prefer to be called Rachel. But what were you saying?
Yeah, well, we did have to have that discussion first. But then, yeah, ultimately circled around.
Okay, yeah. So you both have been in music for a while, and you have toured and played with some really amazing folks and in front of some pretty large audiences. Who produces what? Like, Tyler recorded and produced Rachel's solo record? Why? How come? Why did you tap this dude to record and produce your stuff?
Well, because he was nice.
Oh.
And also because he was being extra nice by being affordable. So that was part of it, because I was super broke at the time. But also, I think just like when I was doing some of that solo stuff, that same friend, Gibby, like, he played on some of that a little bit. It was one of those things where I wanted to do it with friends and with people that I knew, rather than just go hire out some engineer at a studio who, you know, for them, it's like $1,000 or whatever, like, not so much for the reason of spending the money, but just like, you hire somebody who is doing a ton of projects, you know, that same week, and yours is just another one in the bucket to them. And I kind of thought, you know, this would be a lot more fun to collaborate and do stuff with friends that I know and then who I admire musically, and kind of have a more back and forth sort of process. So that was a lot of why I thought I'd rather do it with Tyler than just hiring any old guy in the studio.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did, because that's kind of how we learned that we worked well together. So I don't think there would be, there wouldn't be Flarelet, I don't think, if we hadn't had that experience.
And I think that kind of sowed the seeds a little bit of us being able to do every little thing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not having to go to a studio, not having to hire an engineer or producer or mixing engineer or anything like that. Being able to do all those little musical things ourselves. I think that sort of sowed the seed, but it's always been important to me because, you know, creative freedom's always been a big thing for me because some of my favorite bands have DIY'd their shit almost their entire careers.
Hey, Streetwalkers, here's a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, I'm not one of the dadgum historians, patsies, dreamers, and want to be on Route 66. I'm the real deal.
That's Harley Russell, the most colorful citizen of Erick, Oklahoma. He's just one of many characters you'll meet this season in Vanishing Postcards as we motor west cross-country on Route 66.
There's so many stories on Route 66 that are gonna disappear. And so one of the most valuable things I think about traveling Route 66 is to hear people's stories.
From an eating contest in the Texas Panhandle to a morning on the Santa Monica Pier, we'll experience much of 66 while exploring how its past, present, and future are revealed through the people and places you'll find driving it today. I'm Evan Stern, and invite you to ride along by following Vanishing Postcards wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back into it.
So y'all both live in Nashville?
So I did for years and years. Right currently, I live in New Orleans, Louisiana, but I'm back and forth all the time. Like, I'm in Nashville right now, and Tyler's just outside of it.
Are you staying at somebody's house, or are you staying at a bed and breakfast? And here's why I'm asking, because whatever that shelf is behind you is the most crooked thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, no, it's not crooked. It's my computer angle. Wait, hold on there.
All right. Okay. I feel better.
Yeah, there you go. I'm staying with a friend of ours, Angela Lisi, who's also a super badass drummer in town.
Angela Lisi, for those listening, Streetwalkers, if you will, Angela Lisi has been a guest two or three times on this show. And here's a little Easter egg. Most of you listening don't know this. She was a guest on a different podcast that I was co-host of before I even started this one. Angela Lisi is super dope. She is one of the nicest people that I've ever met coming out of Nashville.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're big fans.
She's rad.
She's super rad. I am also a big fan. Okay. So The Light We Make, which came out November 11th. This is your second album, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
What was the first one called?
Glimmer.
And when did that drop?
July.
Yeah, July 2019, while I was on the American tour for Queen and Adam Lambert, I think.
Yeah.
End of July?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. We did that end of July, and then we finally got the vinyl release August or September 2020, because, you know, pandemic kind of put a damper on getting that to us.
Yeah.
And that is still a thing. I recently had on the singer for Unwritten Law, and he was talking about how their album was supposed to come out in 2020, but it got delayed until like last month because of the pandemic and the vinyl. And when vinyl did come out, they could only get like purple or white. Like, black's not even an option right now because there's just a vinyl shortage.
Yeah.
I hate to sound like a total asshole, but I'm going to. That album came out in 2019. This album, this new one, The Light We Make, came out November 11th of 2022. I know you guys weren't touring during COVID, so what's the haps? Why did it take so long to get this album out, you bunch of lazy bones?
Yeah, well, lots of little extenuating circumstances, I guess, because there was a little chunk of time where we couldn't or just wouldn't get together because we didn't know what was going on with the world. But we were writing the whole time, so we had a shitload of songs. And then whenever we finally had these little pockets where we could get together and record, we would do as much as we can. We had a couple of weeks. And when did we finally get back together? Was it 2021?
Yeah, I think February 2021, we did a big stint for probably like 10 days or so, just recording what we had written up to that point. that kind of started to get that put together, like mixed and that sort of thing. Wrote a few more things, did another couple of sessions. And part of why it takes a while is, like you were saying, is initially just for the first part of COVID, we were like, well, I guess we'll stay separate and just send each other stuff remotely, you know, while we wait and find out what's going on. But then secondarily, just because we're doing essentially everything in-house, you know, from the writing and the recording to the mixing and the mastering and the art design and that type of thing, is it just like we're only two people, so it takes a while for us. We're not farming a lot of that out to like other people on a team so that it can be done simultaneously, or at least we didn't for this album. So it takes us a while because we're wearing a bunch of hats.
Yeah.
You guys are, you're wearing all kinds of hats. So Tyler, I know that you are in other projects currently simultaneously. Are you, Rachel?
This is my main one right now. I play a handful of other things. I'm actually, like, speaking of Angela Lisi, she has a Foo Fighters tribute right now called Fingernails Are Pretty. We just played a show. She asked me to be her guitar player for that, which was super cool. We played a show in August for that, and I think there may be some stuff coming up. I played for a handful of other just artists here and there. So nothing on the scale of Queen. But yeah, I have lots of other friends in music. And so I love to sit in with them and do other little things. But Flarelight's been my main focus overall for the last several years.
Okay. This question is for both of you. And please take this in the spirit in which it is intended, which is I'm a guy who can't play a lick of anything. I can't play a tambourine.
Have you tried?
I have. I would have trouble playing a triangle or a dinner bell. What is it like, first you, Rachel, what is it like when somebody calls you and says, look, I've seen what you do. I think you're awesome. I want you to come aboard my project, like you were saying that Angela did with this Fingernails or Food Fighters.
It's really cool. Like, it's especially, I mean, in a town like Nashville, for example, there are so many people who play and there are so many people who are really, really good. So the competition is super stiff. So to have somebody call you up specifically, you know, and say, hey, I dig how you play. I'd like to have you in my band or on a show is like, I always try to take it as a huge compliment because they're not calling you because there isn't anybody else. There's definitely somebody else they could have called. And it's extra, extra fun. Like in the case of that, like with Angie, I mean, she's a kick-ass drummer. So like, it's always an honor to be asked, but then when it's somebody that you like also admire, that makes it that much more exciting. Just be like, yes. Okay.
Like that specifically, Angela probably, like, no bullshit, she probably knows 100 people she could have called, but she chose you. Come on, man, pat yourself on the back or something. Like, get excited. Holy shit.
Well, no, dude, I'm telling you, I was excited and it was a super fun show. So it's, yeah, she's super fun to play with.
Listeners, what you didn't see was that when I told Rachel to pat herself on the back, not only did she, but Tyler actually reached around and patted the back of the laptop. So he was patting her on the back also. Tyler, what does it feel like when you get that call?
Where the hell have you been? I've always kind of had a mindset of, it's like you said, there's hundreds of thousands of other musicians out there. And
I mean, you beat out how many people just to be part of that Queen thing?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Like six, at least.
Six, seven.
Yeah. I mean, and especially something like that, I think about like how much that's changed my life and how could have easily been somebody else, you know?
Here's a question about how it changed your life. Take this with a smile, hopefully. Your current hairstyle is, I don't know, Brian May circa 1978. Like, is that on purpose?
I mean, this is all I can do with this little mop here, you know? I mean, I work with what I got.
Jealous over here. I put headphones on so people think I have hair.
And I just hope that I still have my hair like Brian does whenever I'm his age.
Word.
Yeah. And if it's white, maybe that's a plus. Who knows? It'll just make me look like a mad scientist like he does.
Oh, yeah.
Silver Fox.
Oh, listen to that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Again, the name of the album is The Light We Make. It came out on November 11th. I'm going to ask you a favor. And this is a single that has been out for a few weeks now. It's okay if you say no. Can I play Make Me Sick?
Of course.
Please do.
Before I do, can you tell me what the song is about? Because at first I was like, oh, this is going to be about, oh, you make me sick. You make me sick. Oh, you make me sick. Because that's all we do right now is tell everybody how everybody else makes them sick.
God, they wrote another fucking COVID song. Give me a break.
Exactly. There you go. I was going to go politics, but there you go.
So, yeah.
So what is this song about? Because it's not exactly that. It's a little more intricate than that.
Yeah, it's more or less... if you want to get right down to it, it's kind of looking at sex as a drug, I guess you could say, more or less.
Yeah, and being like kind of addicted to a toxic or a potentially toxic relationship, kind of a that sort of a vibe.
Yeah.
Did you guys write it together, I'm assuming, of course?
We basically collaborate on every song that we do. Yeah. Like there'll often be an idea, usually like the initial idea or kind of concept will originate with one of us, but then we send stuff back and forth. And so ultimately we do them all together.
Yeah. Usually the genesis of a song starts with one of us and we've kind of got the bare bones of the song there. And then we start sending back and forth and collaborating and changing things here and there, maybe a word, but almost always some kind of musical thing is going to get changed. And I think that's kind of where we have a strength is, A, we're open to it. We're not going to get butt hurt if one of us says, hey, this part sucks, let's change it. And B, I mean, yeah, and B.
And B, yes.
Once again, November 11th, your second album, The Light We Make, came out. And right now we're going to play one of the singles off that album called Make Me Sick. Would you guys like to introduce it like your radio DJs? It's one of my favorite things.
Oh, how do we do that?
Have you ever heard radio before?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I'm trying to think of, I mean.
Hey, everybody. Hi, everybody.
Hey, guys. This is Rachel.
And this is Tyler Warren.
And we're from Flarelight. Get ready because we're about to play our new single,
Make Me Sick.
Off their newest album, The Light We Make, which came out November 11th everywhere. Go get it.
Hope you enjoy it.
We're going to get fired as radio DJs for sure.
How have either of us not had speeches before? We should do this for a living.
Well, the good news is you might not have speeches, but you do have speech impediments, apparently.
Complete lack of flow.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Rachel, Tyler, before I let you go, where can people find you on social media?
All over now. Mm-hmm. So you can find us on Instagram. I would say Instagram is where we're most active. So you can just go to Flarelight Official there.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be easily able to find us. Rachel, your personal one.
Rachel Brandsness on Instagram if you want to follow me.
And then mine is Tyler _Effin_Warren.
He thinks a lot of himself.
Hey, guess who? And it wasn't me who came up with that.
Yeah.
It was our mutual buddy.
Our friend Gibby.
Gibby!
Yeah.
This episode is dedicated to Gibby.
I know.
Damn straight it is.
And you can find us on Facebook. We have a YouTube.
And thanks to Angie, we have a fucking TikTok now.
Oh, yeah. I know.
I love you, Angie, but you know. I'm not interesting enough for TikTok.
Well, who really is? But
I would like to say that nobody is interesting enough for shit, because we use the word fascinating around here because we're fascinated. Okay. All right.
I got the Cure reference, by the way.
The Cure?
Fascination Street.
What is the cure for COVID? Or what do you?
The band The Cure.
Huh?
They had a song called Fascination Street.
Are you messing with me?
I'm not messing with you.
Well, I'm messing with you. Of course they do.
All right.
All right. Tyler, Rachel, before I let you go, is there anything we didn't talk about or I didn't ask you about that you wanted to talk about today? Did I miss anything specifically?
I don't think so.
I think we're kind of good to go. I mean, I always forget shit whenever I'm on these things talking. So, I mean,
yeah, if you want to pick up copies of our album on CD or vinyl, they can visit flarelightofficial.com, and we've got a little web store there.
Is that with a dash or without?
No dash, just flarelightofficial.com.
Okay. I forget.
Yeah.
See, that's exactly what I was looking for. Thanks for bringing the juice, Rachel.
No problem. I got you.
She's the brains.
Yeah. He's the brains and the brandsness.
Yeah.
Rachel Brandsness, Tyler Warren from the band Flarelight. Thank you both so much for taking the time out of your busy day and your hectic, I guess, songwriting all damn day schedule to hang out and let us get to know you a little bit better on Fascination Street. I really appreciate it.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
It was 100% my pleasure. And both of you, go have a great rest of your week.
Alrighty.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Opening music is the song Magnolia from the 2001 album Intransigence, used with permission from Douglas Miles Clark. Closing music is from the song Say My Name off the 2021 album Underdog Anthems, used with permission from Jax Hollow. If you like the show, tell a friend, subscribe, and rate and review the show on iTunes and wherever else you download podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. All the episodes are available there as well. Check me out on Vero at Fascination Street Pod and TikTok at Fascination Street Pod. And again, thanks for listening.